Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Consequence Podcast Network. Welcome to In Defense of Ska. We aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of the music. Ska deserves the respect genres like punk, hip-hop, and hardcore find among their listeners. Our host is renowned music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska, Aaron Carnes.
Today we talk about Stuck Lucky, a ska punk band that started in the mid-2000s, a low point for U.S. ska, in Nashville, Tennessee, a city not known for ska or punk, and how, against all odds, they've toured, released several records, and found a fan base. To tell the band's story, we bring on three members, Will Carter, Lee Doss, and Jonesy. Stuck Lucky just released their new album, Counting Curses, on SPI Records. It's their first LP in 8 years. And now joining me is my co-host, veteran ska musician, Adam Davis, who's been in many ska bands, including Link 80 and Omnigon.
I got to see Stuck Lucky at Gilman when they came to play their West Coast run with Noise Complaint. I thought they were so good. I mean, specifically at that show.
Yeah, I think I saw them in the same run, but in Sacramento.
Yeah. Omnigon played that show, and that show was fine. But like their set at Gilman, I thought was really something special.
What was so special about it? Like what memory about that show like sticks in your brain?
I just remember they were all just kind of going full on. And I think like everybody kind of contributes vocals. Will was just kind of throwing himself all over the place. It just felt real good. They sounded great. PA was super loud. I just had a great time watching them.
So they are in the second edition of my book. I didn't interview them, but they were mentioned.
Okay.
Because I have the ending chapters all about the lost years, the sort of like time period after ska left the mainstream in the US and kind of leading up to the present. So when we're kind of getting into the build up to sort of the current era, I definitely discussed them in context to the Block Party and Community Records and the Bad Operation guys kind of building that scene. Because what was an interesting time period about then was that there was sort of the scene happening with ska punk where it was like on the East Coast and the South, not so much the West Coast, very little bit here.
Yeah.
And like those bands were all kind of networking together and playing together. I don't think like there was many ska bands in each city, but like they all were homies with each other and they all toured with each other.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that anytime we get these stories, that's the thing that I'm struck with the most is I feel like I missed out on this whole really cool period of ska punk bands because we were just, you know, isolated from it.
You could have helped bring the West Coast, connected the West Coast to that scene if you had just stuck around.
If only I'd started Omnigon sooner.
Yeah.
You know, for many ska bands, they exist and thrive in spite of everything around them. Stuck Lucky have lived that narrative their whole career. Okay, go in alphabetical order. State your name and what you do in the band.
Jonesy, that's you.
Jonesy.
Hi, I'm Jonesy. Shut the fuck up. I'm Jonesy. I'm the singer of Stuck Lucky.
Hi, I'm Lee. I play guitar and vocals.
I'm Will. I play trombone.
So back in 2011, you guys played Block Party. And there's footage of your performance of Block Party. I think they even made little DVDs of it at the time, Community Records. And the footage that really strikes me is when you guys play Devastation.
So much fun.
It gets to the chorus, and all of a sudden, everybody just piles on. Like, I don't, the whole crowd is there with you, singing. And then you get, you, when you finish the chorus, it's like they all leave, and it just seems so well coordinated. I just was like, wow, that's amazing. Like, can you tell me a little bit about, like, what you remember about Block Party specifically, but also just like Devastation and how this kind of came about? Because it's my understanding it still happens, doesn't it, when you guys play Devastation?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah,
depends where we are. We always invite everybody to come sing it with us, but the number one thing I remember from that was Jimmy Doyle's crowd kill.
Yeah,
he did he just did a straight cannonball into the audience. I'm pretty sure he just hit the ground pretty solidly, but was that Fred from Adam Age and Woody and God, it was so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I remember it, all the Block Parties just being hot and wet. And it was always fun to like play on the outdoor stage, because anytime we would play inside, it was just insufferable. But for the most part, like, yeah, anywhere we play it, just depending on the crowd who knows it, like people will rush the stage. But that was pretty special getting it on footage, because I think that was like the largest Block Party, because that was like what RX Bandits were playing, or
yeah, it was RX Bandits.
Yeah, so it was a pretty big crowd, so it was pretty fun to just be there, and there was just a lot of people.
Just for context for people, Block Party is in New Orleans. It's put on by Community Records, the guys who would eventually go on to form Bad Operation, and Block Party is a thing that they'd been doing there for quite a while, and it's, there's some years where it's like 2011 was definitely like a year where it was really popular, and like a lot of great bands, and like a good amount of people came and stuff. But it's always been like DIY and very community oriented.
Block Party was always like Christmas to us. It was like a huge family reunion. All the bands you played with from all over the country, your extended family, everybody showed up. Mm-hmm. It was unreal, man. I don't know if there's ever going to be anything like it. It was just pretty incredible.
And this whole thing, you know, not just the year we're talking, which is 2011, but this whole thing is just in this period of time where ska is supposedly not a viable genre. And Block Party, though it has different bands play it, it definitely starts out being primarily a ska thing.
We've played every one of them except the very first one, which I think was, what, 2008?
2008.
And I think the only reason we didn't do it was, I think we had been talking with Greg and D-Ray about Community, and it was very loose, and they invited us, and we were like, yeah, we'll see, and it just didn't work out. But then every year after, it just, we always made it a point to go, and we just saw it kind of ebb and flows to where, I forgot when the last one was before, I think it was like 2016 was the last one before they took a hiatus. Mm-hmm. And we ended up playing like at a Hey Coffee Shop. We did like the pre-party or something like that, so that was pretty fun.
The sweatiest show of all time.
Yeah,
any New Orleans show sweaty, except for that was it the one
year is a winter.
Yeah, the one birthday party we played,
it was like 30 degrees.
Yeah, we ended up got to play like some decrepit mansion or something, but it was in January and they had a cold snap, and I remember we got stuck at a Alabama gas station because there's a bunch of black ice everywhere. And it was the only New Orleans show that I think we've played where it wasn't over 80 degrees. So I don't know. But yeah, so we've played every one of them except that very first one.
Yeah, I think we were in between drummers at that time.
Have you played the recent Block Parties?
We played the last one last year when they at Tipitina's. So
Yeah.
So that was cool. It was fun, like, because I know that's like a historic venue. And it was, I know, like, the Bad Time Tour, like, coincided with it, so it all, and the Fatter Than Albert reunion. So, yeah, Greg just like, do you guys want to play? We're like, of course. Why not?
It was unreal, man. It's like a bucket list place I've always wanted to play, and I was very nervous because that stage is just great. I've always wanted to play there.
So during this whole time, you guys are block parties happening. There's this whole network of bands like Fatter Than Albert and you guys, Flaming Tsunamis. You guys are all like friend bands that are friends with each other, and you guys are gigging together all over the U.S. or mostly the East Coast.
No, wait, East Coast.
Yeah. And so this is like kind of this was sort of like the bigger, would you say this is sort of like the bigger thing that you guys would do annually?
Knoxville too.
What happened there?
Ska Weekend?
Ska Weekend.
Yeah. Planet Smashers, ME330 played 1 year. It was a big, big celebration. Mm. You haven't heard about this?
Mm-mm.
You haven't seen this? You haven't heard about this?
You haven't seen this?
I thought you were a ska historian. What about Ska Weekend?
Well, part of being a ska historian is collecting new data at all times, and that's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. Our buddy Ben Altum played with the band Perfect Orange. They would throw this huge party in the middle of Old City in Knoxville. This is like right pre... this is actually where we met Fatter Than Albert.
Yeah.
We played on a small stage outside that was absolutely insane. I have footage of that somewhere. And then across on us were like courthouse stairs, and Fatter Than Albert played there and just totally blew us away. And we ended up becoming like best buddies since then. What year was that? Do you remember?
That was 2006.
Six or seven.
It was 2006 because we booked a show for, it was the Fad, Flaming Tsunamis, High School Football Heroes at some venue called Hair of the Dog, and Jimmy, they were staying at our house. Like, we all lived in a punk house together, basically. I think there was like, what, 9 of us?
At one point, yeah.
Yeah, Lee and I shared a room. I had a rollout sleeping bag from a closet, and I had like an accordion, a sleeping bag, and a bass amp. That's really all I owned. But Doyle came, and then he hit us up. He's like, hey, do you guys want to go on tour like in a couple of months? And we're like, yeah, we're getting our album together. And so that was the first show of that tour. We did a month with the Fad, and we played Ska Weekend, and that was like the first day we had our first album, and we sold, I think, 60 copies for $10 each. And so we started a tour with like $600, which was
unheard of for us.
And we thought we were like rolling in it. It was great. We're like, tour's great. But yeah, it was, I remember talking to Ben, I think, because they had the Ska Weekend the year before, I think it was the year it started, and I was still in college, and I remember like on a message board trying to get us on the show, and he's like, no, you guys are, I don't want one more band. I remember talking to Jeff Rosenstock, because he had just started Bomb the Music Industry, and I was like, I can't believe he won't let us play this Ska Weekend, because we're like, you know, a Tennessee ska band. Like, do you guys want to play a show with us in protest across the street? We're going to rent a generator and do a show. And I remember he was like, I don't want to piss him off. And I was like, I don't know this guy, even though like we kind of knew him, but we ended up getting on the next year. I don't know. It was like hard.
Well, ASOB would play every year too, right?
No, they never, they like broke up, because I remember I joined the band in 2004. My first show, or my second show with you guys, was ASOB, Big D and the Kids Table, Streetlight Manifesto, and High School Football Heroes. And then that was just like, I don't know, I guess you call it the beginning of the dark ages of ska, whatever. And then, yeah, I'm just rambling, which hopefully I won't do. But yeah, so Ska Weekend, I think, started in like 2005. And then it went to like, what, 2008 or 9? Because I think like
nine. Yeah.
Because I think we played every one of them. Because I think the one in 2008 was when they had the Slackers, Go Jimmy Go, Big D, Planet Smashers, Voodoo Glow Skulls, like all like the Mustard Plug, like all the big names, like at the time. And I think, I won't say he blew his budget, but it was just like he didn't
cut it a ton of bands.
And yeah.
Not all of them were cheap like us, though. So. The best part of that, I have to say this, is at the end of the nights, they would throw a big, just like open stage party at this local like bar pizza parlor place. I mean, it was huge. So this is like a murderer's row of performers coming up and playing together. I mean, like, yeah, it was incredible. Huge parties. It's like Slackers, Hub City Stompers. Yeah. I mean, incredible.
So you guys are from Nashville. I want to discuss that a little bit. And by reading the first line in an article written about you in 2012 in the Nashville Scene, it says, Nashville, for better or worse, is not a punk rock town.
True statement.
I mean, it comes and goes.
Yeah.
It comes and goes. It used to be there was a place called Lucy's Record Shop. It was amazing. Was usually too young to go. Only got to go a couple times. But it's like cult status here in Nashville. But when Lucy shut down, things changed quite a bit. There was a bunch of all ages venues that kind of opened up in different boroughs around the city. We tried as hard as we could. But the thing that I did kind of miss, I do kind of miss about that time, is that everybody was so desperate and hungry for music that all of the bills were just total mixed bills. So we'd play with, like, you know, metal bands, reggae bands. It didn't matter. Like, everybody just wanted something to do, which is cool. But there was no, maybe one other ska punk band in town at the time.
What were they called?
Well, come on, man.
Me?
Yeah.
I mean, you guys started the band. I don't know. Like, I saw you guys, I think, three times before I joined the band, and I was like, they're fine. I know there was a band called Conniption. Do you remember those guys? Spelled with a K. They were at a...
You just be making shit up right now, dude.
I have a CD somewhere, but where I grew up in Franklin, which is like 30 minutes like south, so that's like another county over. But we had a kind of a scene like where they were talking about. There was the venues like that opened up. It was Next Generation, IndieNet, and The Muse. The Muse stuck around for years. That's where we played, I think, our most local shows. But as far as like ska punk bands,
there's maybe one or two. Anyway,
maybe.
Yeah.
AK Rudy was really, they were like more of a traditional ska reggae band. I don't know if they've been brought up on here before, but they used to do these shows once a month. This place called Windows on the Cumberland, downtown Nashville, right on the Cumberland River, obviously. Huge parties. That's what really, they really got me into traditional blue beat, all that old kind of stuff, because they would do 99% covers, and they'd bring in people like Dr. Ring Ding, Django, people from, I mean, Will actually played with their keyboard player and Soul Radix.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
But I definitely looked up to those guys because I was in high school going to these shows and just being blown away by the musicianship and how tight they were.
So I think like your average person listening, no matter where they live, they know Nashville is a country town, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's not just a country town. It's an industry. And stuff that I've read about or interviews that I've done as a music journalist, it's like there's Nashville, and then there's like sort of the, and almost like the alternative scene to Nashville is the alternative country scene. And is it like East Nashville? Is that how it's often described? So, but you don't really hear about, you go like, oh, there's Music Row and there's East Nashville. And like East Nashville is like the dingy, punky stuff. But you don't even really hear about other types of music outside of a country Americana type of thing in Nashville. So
we have a little bit of everything here.
Yeah, a little bit of everything. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of garage rock. That was kind of the thing for a minute. Especially like when like Jack White moved to town.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, early 2000s was not the best time to be kicking off as a ska punk band in Nashville.
Yeah.
Lots of scummy cokehead indie rock. I don't even know. Lee's right. More like garage rock kind of.
There's been so many different scenes that have like popped up and then just disappeared. And then I think it's like for us still being around, it's like finding new local bands to play with. Like when we book shows, like we used to book, I think like 2-3 shows a month. Like we'd play at the Muse and then randomly kind of around town. And then now it's like, we'll play maybe every 3 months, maybe every 4 months, but it's still kind of, I wouldn't say a struggle to find bands, but it's just bands come and go like pretty fast, it seems like. So, but I think what, like Infinity Cat, that was in label for a while. I don't know if you're familiar with that label at all.
Mm-mm.
It's like this band called Jeff the Brotherhood. They were,
Like I know that band. Yeah.
So they started it with their dad, and it was like a subsidiary of Warner Records. And so like the garage rock kind of scene started popping off around like 2009 to like
13.
Yeah. So it's always, it's been, stuff comes in waves where like a lot of like cool bands pop off, and you'll see some stuff in like Rolling Stone, like Jet the Brotherhood, Diarrhea Planet, which is the best band name.
When I was working as a journalist, Diarrhea Planet, in my opinion, are a great band. Terrible name. I pitched to my editor. They came through town. I pitched to my editor. I said, can I interview and write about this band? And he said, I will not have a band called Diarrhea Planet be in my newspaper. All right. Fair point.
They're incredible, though, man.
Yeah.
I think, Lee, you worked with the singer. What's his name?
Jordan.
Yeah, you guys worked together at a guitar shop for a while, but yeah, they just kind of like, I think they just kind of retired from being a band because I think they went as far as they could for a band being called Diarrhea Planet, where I think it's just the point where people are still like, they're called Diarrhea Planet. I don't want to book them, but they, you know, they made a name for themselves and they're a great band. You know,
what a name they made.
So it's just a little notch in the Nashville music scene belt. So it's just, it's pretty funny seeing stuff like that pop up.
We've always kind of done our own thing though, really. I mean, like,
yeah,
like in North Nashville where, like, you know, my parents live and stuff like that. We found a place in Ridgetop, Tennessee, just like a trailer off in the woods on top of this big hill. And we used to throw field parties out there and it would just be a ton of metal bands and punk bands. And we didn't really, you know, cause there wasn't as many places to play as we'd like. And yeah, we've always just kind of found bands that we love around town and asked them to come join us for a while.
Doesn't Nashville also have a pretty substantial Christian music industry there?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe.
The Southern Baptist Coalition is here, so yeah, the headquarters.
There's a venue called Rocket Town. Do they still do shows? Do you guys know?
I think so.
Because it was this venue called Rocket Town that would also have a skate park, and I think this is like probably 10 years ago or so, like, Social Distortion would play there. Rancid would play there, but I think they would tell them you can't curse. We played there twice, and the first time we played there, we got banned because Lee had a pentagram spray painted on his amp. And we were playing a show with The Know-How from Florida.
Yeah,
like we played a show there, and like we got banned afterwards, and then we ended up playing a show, I think, like 8 years later there. But they would always have I know they would have dodgeball tournaments after shows and stuff. I don't know. Like I went to some show and like one of our friends was tour managing. He's like, hey, come on in. I was like, cool. And then like, he's like, you doing the dodgeball tournament? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, oh, they have dodgeball tournaments all the time. And so I think that was like the cool, like Christian place to play. But yeah, there's definitely like the Christian music industry and like the country music industry, they're kind of intertwined. And you'll see, have either of you been to Nashville before, like kicking around or anything?
I haven't. Have you, Adam?
Yeah, I played at IndieNet with Link 80.
Lee saw you there.
Yeah.
Talking to Andy about this yesterday, actually.
Yeah.
Small world.
Yeah, that was in 98.
Yeah, that sounds right. Mm-hmm.
How was Adam?
I don't really remember. I was like a kid.
You're supposed to say he was amazing.
Amazing.
That's almost, what, 30 years ago? Yeah.
Well, Andy told me that you guys went to go see B.B. King on the river. They canceled the show. So our friend's parents decided to go bar hopping on Broadway and just get shit hammered. And they were like, yeah, you guys have fun. And you guys walked all the way down to IndieNet and walked in. Didn't even know Link 80 was playing. Mm. Was that with Mustard Plug?
We never played with Mustard Plug.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
We did play a show at IndieNet, though, and we played the early show, and then the late show was Bongzilla and Unsane.
Gosh. Fuck yeah, dude.
And they were like, you guys can hang out and watch this if you want. It was awesome.
I'd love to see Unsane.
Wasn't it with Pimp Slap? Andy said that before, too. Like, that
sounds right.
Yeah, I think it was Pimp Slap. We've also played with Bongzilla, so that's fun.
We played IndieNet a lot too, like before, like our first CD, like I guess our second record, the back of the insert is a picture of IndieNet of us playing in there.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. Just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good. All 100% free.
What if I had three jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.
Just to kind of like reiterate this kind of discussion we're having here, like most cities in the US, of course, ska and punk are not like the primary scenes. It's just the way it is. But most cities are not music industry cities. There's very few cities that are that. So what is it like to be in a band where the city is a music industry city and it's nothing to do with the kind of music you played? Is it something you ignore, or does it kind of like the present at all times?
Could be a little alienating, I guess, but it's really hard because it is incredibly hard to impress a Nashville audience because
playing to a bunch of musicians.
Yeah. And everybody, a lot of people are in the industry and they know some of the best guitar players in the world and songwriters. They live here. Legendary Shack Shakers. I saw them one of the best shows I've ever seen in Nashville, and packed room, five people gave a shit. Mm-hmm. And I was one of them, just dancing our asses off. But everybody else was just kind of observing. It was very odd, but a lot of fun too.
Yeah, it does seem like Nashville is in particular is a city with a lot of musicians and a lot of studio musicians, because I'm not sure how many moved to LA. You know, there's a lot of industry in LA, but there's a lot of players in Nashville.
You get to see like I think it was the drummer for the Goo Goo Dolls. Anyway, there's like people that used to be huge in the 90s and stuff like that that are just kind of like doing their own thing now, starting their own bands, playing aside other punk bands here in town. It's kind of fun. It's weird. It's cool. But I don't know. It's people don't get all like starstruck because those people are just everywhere, but nobody really gives a shit what you're doing, especially when it comes to playing punk. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I think that's why a lot of celebrities have been moving here, because Nashville has a reputation for not giving a shit that, you know, like, oh, there's so-and-so. Like, I've worked at Whole Foods. Jonesy's worked at Whole Foods. And like, you see a lot of celebrities come in, and like the policy is to like not take pictures, but no one really cares. You know, it's just like kind of an everyday occurrence. You'll see somebody around, but
so who's some celebrities that you've seen at work?
Oh man, my favorite was Kid Rock. I saw him at the self checkout. He looked like he got hit by a truck. He looked gross, and it was awesome. He's also, if you do come to Nashville, is it still open? Kid Rock's Big Ass Honky Tonk.
Oh yeah.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, he's got his own restaurant. Any like country singer of note or adjacent, because you know Kid Rock's country hits. They have like some type of bar or eatery in downtown Nashville. But I think Kid Rock and Ted Danson. Those are my two favorite.
Ted Danson. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Very handsome in person. Very tall.
Mm.
Yeah. Definitely a hairpiece. On screen. Took me by surprise. Not really. I think like you're saying, like the music industry part, it's not that I don't think not that they're seeking us out, but like we're relatively ignored. And a lot of bands that you kind of pop out in Nashville, not saying this in a mean way, they have like some sort of backing or they have some sort of connection or whatever. So it's, I don't know, you can kind of see, I don't know, get a little jaded, because there's a lot of great bands in Nashville that have just been just like slogging it for years. And I'm not including us in that. We just happen to be a band that's still slogging. But it's just like you just kind of see some bands that pop off like within like 6 months. You're like, I've never heard of this. And then you learn that their parents work for a label, or their parents have a lot of money, or they get like some sort of endorsement from so-and-so, and they're like, this is the new thing from Nashville. And like, I don't know. I think we just kind of ignore it at this point. Like it's not really a thing. It's just like, you kind of drive downtown, and I was talking to Chris from SPI about what's the possibility of us getting on one of those digital billboards downtown for maybe like,
yes.
Not that we have $10,000, but it's like, how much will $10,000 get me? Will that get me
5 minutes?
Will that give me 5 minutes at 2 a.m. on a Wednesday? Because let's do it, man. Because, like, I don't know. Like, it's just very hard to, like, figure out how to market yourself in Nashville or even even just like promote a show that's not online. Cause we used to go around and put up flyers for like hours at a time on all the telephone poles, put up like 200-300 flyers, and then, you know, still see a 30 to 40 people show up at a show. And, you know, that's good enough for us.
But you're not even allowed to do that anymore.
No.
They find the venue if you flyer in certain areas.
Oh, wow.
The city's changed, man. Over the last 20 years, it used to be definitely a much more gritty kind of place. they've cleaned up a lot of that.
Yeah, the venue that we played at the most, the Muse, was it's now a Domino's Pizza, which is great. But it used to be in front of the, which is now Larry Flint's Hustlers Club, but it used to be in front of the world's largest porn store, which I know that tracks because you can't advertise anything as world's largest if it's not. So I'm pretty sure that was the world's largest. But it used to be kind of like right next to the interstate overpass that goes into the rougher part of town. But that was definitely a place where people were like, I would go see you guys if you weren't playing there. But it was the only all ages place at the time that would just host like really good shows. Like it was called the CBGBs of the South by who, I don't know, but it was just a grimy club. It was like a big black box full of stickers, covered in stickers. And it was just great. What was it? I think one time the owner, Logan, we were playing and he told us, he's like, man, that was great. But some kid got hogtied and put in the back of his car while you guys were playing. We're like, cool, man. And he's like, is he okay? He's like, yeah, he's fine. He's just shaken up. He got robbed. And we're like, okay, super cool. And there's like, there were so many bands where we would like tell them, like, don't park over here. You need to park in this area. And I was surprised by that because like we would book these shows and I would tell them like, don't park here. Always lock your vans. I was always surprised at the number of bands that did not lock their vehicles. And they would go.
One of the Murphy's Kids guys got robbed up there. They stole his computer.
And Fireworks from Michigan. I hosted a show. It was like them, We Are the Union, Billion Ernies. I think one other band. But like they go out and they're like, all our stuff's gone. I was like, did you lock your doors? They're like, I don't think so. And I was like, what am I supposed to what am I supposed to tell you? Like, I told you to lock your doors, you know. So I don't know.
Wow. Let's talk about, so Hate the Light of Day. Is that your first record or is that your second record?
Second.
Okay.
Yeah, we had some like little demos and collections of stuff that we did here and there before that, but the first real like great effort was Hate the Light of Day.
Self-released?
Yeah.
This was before you were on Community? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
The record, so if you go on Spotify, this record has significantly more streams than any of your other records. Do you have any thoughts on why that is?
It's just been around longer.
No idea.
When did Spotify actually start doing stuff? I have no idea.
I don't know.
Everybody loves that record over anything else we've ever done, which is baffling to me, but I think the songs are probably a little bit more catchy, more sing-alongs.
Mm-hmm.
The way it's recorded, our buddy Andrea did it in his basement.
It was his bedroom.
And basement, whatever.
Let's not fight about words.
Yeah. No, but we put a lot of heart and soul into that, man. I think we busted our ass on it. And he's an incredible engineer. But yeah, it was weird and a lot of fun. Plus, we toured relentlessly on that record. We were doing like six months at a time.
So back in the mid late 2000s, you guys were on the road all the time?
All the time. That's why we lived together. I mean, we lost our house once while we were in Marquette, Michigan.
Yep.
Got kicked out of our house. Because we had a firework war inside of the house and in the yard. And Lee's retaliation to me was to punch out a window and throw a handful of bottle rockets at me. I guess we didn't clean up well enough. And
nah.
So our friends and girlfriends moved all of our shit out while we were in Michigan.
Yeah, came back from tour into a different home. It was weird.
So it wasn't the landlords that kicked you out. It was your friends?
No, it was the landlords.
No, it was the
landlords. They're like, you guys got to go.
Okay.
We would like sublease our house, or our friends would just stay while we weren't there because we were going out like a month at a time. We would go home for a month, come home for a month, and then we would go out for a month again. And just, we just, because we were like early 20s and just touring in a GMC Safari van that we bought for, I think, $100 is what we ended up paying when we owed, I think, what, $400 or something. But we just toured on that record. We repressed it or on CD like 3 times.
Mm-hmm. We did a lot of footwork on that. We handed out a lot. Even like dudes at gas station were like, "You guys in a band?" We're like, "Yeah, here you go."
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, brother.
We hit Florida relentlessly too. I bet a lot of those plays are in Florida. We would do weeks at a time.
I
heard Jer talking about it saying that they had seen us down there a few times. And I was like, I couldn't even tell you when that was, because we would do, I think one time we did 3 weeks alone just in Florida.
It was, yeah, we did wow. 2 weeks alone. We went down one side and just went back up.
Yeah, that was part of that was a 3 month long tour. We're like, fuck it, let's spend 2 weeks in Florida where we drive like 45 minutes. There's some place to play. Lee and I would always get sick every time we go to Florida. Like I got tonsillitis one time or something, but I don't know. It was just a lot of fun touring that much because we were really proud of that album and we were just excited to get it out there and just be like, oh man, we're going to get to play with like all our heroes, all the bands we look up to. And we would keep telling ourselves that each time we'd go out and be like, oh man, you know what? We're going to get that call from, you know, Voodoo Glow Skulls or Slackers, and all right, well, we're just going to keep going back out and let's print some more. And like, somebody's going to, oh man, Fat Mike's going to be like, hey guys, what's up? I don't know how Fat Mike talks, but we just like kept going on for it, like with that album for like, I don't know, 2 years, and just like, just kept touring until nothing happened.
Tell me about the song on that record called Skanking with a Handgun.
Song's goofy as shit, man.
Why are you skanking with a handgun?
It's shit. I don't know. How can I explain this?
Shit.
It's a song written by a teenager. Okay. So, but it's, we also had a song called Underground Integrity before that on some demos. And a lot of these were just about dancing your ass off at these little crusty shows, in the middle of the country that we would throw back in the day. And, just, I don't know. It's kind of like, I guess when you are like the only ska punk band in the state at the time, you're feeling kind of alone. And so whenever your hero bands come to town and you go and watch them, you dance your ass off and you have a great time. There's no real deep meaning behind it.
Why with a handgun though?
Yeah. Why with a handgun?
Is it a metaphor?
I don't remember. That was 20 years ago. I do not remember. I'd have to read it.
Our heroes would come back and you would have a gun to threaten them to come back.
Yeah. Threaten them to come and play.
All right.
Nashville, please don't skip Nashville for Atlanta next time.
That happened so many times. It's like we would see tours where like, because we would play Atlanta fairly often too, but like so many big tours were like, man, that'd be so rad if it came through Nashville. No tours just would come through Nashville. It would be like, I don't know, like maybe once a year, twice a year, where something like really big that we were all excited about would come through. And then Nashville and other place, or Atlanta and other places, would get, you know, something like every month, you know. So it was just kind of a little disheartening seeing stuff like that.
I want to jump forward to 2022. Your trombonist dislocated his leg at a show and made a splint out of a drumstick and tape and continued the set. Is that accurate?
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, it was Joe right there.
The old Joe Scala. What's the song? If you are what you eat, I'll be you by tomorrow. Because on the album, our drummer at the time, Eric, played, put some cowbell or something on it.
Because we thought it'd be funny.
It's so funny. So Joe would like come up with a cowbell every time we'd see him. Because we play with Best of the Worst like pretty often. And he would like play the cowbell. I remember that show, was that the meat? No, it wasn't the Meat Locker. That was another place in New Jersey. But wherever it was like kind of packed, like shotgun room. I remember playing that song, and I remember hearing a pop in my head, and then I remember waking up on the ground, but I heard my knee pop out a joint. Like, it was just kind of like a, like right in my ear. Mm-hmm. And then I woke up, and then I tried getting up, and I just couldn't. So I went behind the amps, and I popped my knee back in place because I didn't have health insurance, because I just changed jobs. So I had no health insurance, but I guess luckily I'm double jointed in my knees and my feet. So it still hurt like hell, but there's nothing else I could do. Also, I knew if I went to the hospital, I wouldn't hear the end of it from my partner and my mom, because my mom has the Stuck Lucky fan page on Facebook. Like, she would find out about it like within like 2 hours if somebody, and I found out somebody posted a video about it.
Yeah, Joe basically did a cannonball through Will's knees.
Yeah, I obviously didn't see it. I was like, you said he did like a crocodile death roll or something. Like, he, I don't know what he did, but he like just slammed right into my leg. But I remember taping my leg up, trying to play, and then just vomiting like in the back.
But he finished the set. Will finished the set. So
how is it now? How is it now?
It's fine. It was bruised for like 3 days. Like, we were on tour with Flying Raccoon Suit. I went to CVS and bought a knee brace that I still have. I had to wear like a knee brace for about 4 months. Like, I'd have like a flare up. But at this point, like, I still wear compression socks when I play, and like a knee brace, and just old man stuff. I don't know. Like, I'm almost 40. My body feels pretty fucking wrecked. So thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Well, given another 10 years, when that happens, you will not recover the way that you recovered this time.
If it's the other knee, I think I'll be, I have two knees. It's like having two kidneys. You can take one out, still walk with the other one.
You're right.
Jesus.
Jonesy.
Yes.
You once broke a tooth while eating a tuna sandwich at Subway.
Yeah. It's very embarrassing.
Why?
Just say why?
How was there something in the tuna sandwich?
No. Tuna. Nature's a bitch. I don't know. So I was working at a bar, like the most wonderful bar in Nashville at the time. I love my job so much. Everybody I worked with, we hung out there as a band all the time at night, just hanging out, playing pool. And so I didn't have any health insurance, any insurance whatsoever.
This seems to be a theme.
Dude, most of my teeth are just totally jacked and replaced. So they're okay now, but they would just randomly fall out of my head.
Just randomly.
Yep. Eating a tuna sandwich, and I look down, and Andy's just laughing at me because I'm holding my shattered tooth in my hand.
Oh, man, we gave you so much shit for that.
Which tooth was it?
Most of these are caps. So
one of the back guys or one of the front guys?
It was a molar, yeah. Just evaporated. But I have all my teeth now, so that's when I went to Whole Foods because I needed health insurance so bad. Falling apart.
So it wasn't the tuna sandwich that did it. That was just the final straw.
We're not filing a lawsuit against Subway. So
the Appalachian dental care plan that we have. Do we have fluoride in the water here in Tennessee?
Yeah,
I'm sure we do. Yeah.
Probably.
Actually, my two front teeth. These are fake. I blasted them out on the back of somebody's head at a Korn and the Urge show in like 97. Yeah. So I have a nice, exciting story about each replaced tooth. So, but I finished watching the show. That's the most redneck shit I've ever said.
Hell yeah, brother. I ain't going to miss the Urge for nothing, man.
Did you go to see the Urge or Korn or both?
Both.
Nice.
Dude, I loved Korn. Don't act like you didn't.
Well, I did too.
But no, the Urge just surprised the hell out of me, man. I loved them after that. They were fun. I was also like 16, man. Give me a fucking break.
Where'd you pull up the Subway tooth loss? Do we put that on Facebook or something? Or
I'm not saying.
Aaron just has his way.
You're the Nardwar of ska.
He gets that a lot.
Yeah.
You're not the first person to say that.
I was just
saying. Yeah.
So, Will, back to you. You said before about the knee thing, blacking out. I've heard that you black out every show at some point in the set. Is that true? Or most shows?
I don't black out. I've given myself a concussion like 4 times, and I've broken my nose by kneeing myself in the face. This last weekend, I somehow cut my face, and I had like a bruise, like up here. I don't know. Like, and I have like some sort of gash on my nose too, but
baby nails.
Oh yeah. Like I used to chew my fingernails. Like I stopped chewing them like 2 years ago or something. I think I ripped something out and got infected, but I did something at the show and it just like raked across my face and just like slashed something. But usually I'm not trying to self-injure, but I hit something, and there's been a couple times I've fallen off stage, hit my head. I don't know. It's stupid. And, I don't know. I'm just trying to sell the band to people. Cause I make the most mistakes out of everyone. Cause I'm the only horn player, so it's noticeable. So I don't know. Everybody else is on point, but you know, it's lonely being the only horn player in the band. So I don't have the powerhouse of like a trio or like a harmonies. So I just got to like throw myself or fall on something.
Or hit your singer in the face. Yeah.
No.
The point is, if you go see one of these bands, these industry backed bands, these bands that are on billboards in Nashville, nobody's going to hurt themselves at the set. But if you go see Stuck Lucky, who knows what you'll see?
We don't have health insurance. I think we all have health insurance at this point, but I'm terrified to go to the doctor. So I think I'm getting a dead tooth.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I've been knocked in the face so many times, by people in the crowd. I don't know what it is with some people. They'll just get drunk and they'll try and grab my slide while I'm playing. And then there's been a couple times where I've been just knocked in the teeth, and I'm very afraid to go to the dentist. So I haven't been in like 15 years.
You should go. We're just going to have to like pause this for a second. The sooner you go, the better it's going to be.
I know. I pay for dental. I have dental insurance. It's just finding the time. Who has the time to go to the dentist?
I am very busy and I go to the dentist.
I don't need to be shamed of going to the dentist. That's the one way to make me not go to the dentist. So I don't know.
I care about you and I want you to be healthy. So go to the dentist. You're almost 40.
Yeah. The fact that someone thinks I black out every show makes it sound like I have a drinking problem or something. I do not. But I think the best time to get merch from us is right after we play, because I usually just slump it over the merch table and I'll usually just hand stuff out for free, mm-hmm. because I'm not very coherent.
Because you're blacking out.
He's the only sober guy in the band. He's the one who blacks out all the time.
It's fine.
Something wrong here.
We'll be right back after this.
All right, let's talk about a place called the Halloween House in Indianapolis. Is that Indianapolis?
Yes.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
I want to hear about this and house shows in general. I've heard through my sources that it was a place that you guys have played a lot of shows at, and it's a interesting little scene I should learn more about.
Do you not go to a lot of house shows?
I've been to plenty of house shows, but I'm curious. I've never been to a house show in Indianapolis.
I don't think it's much of a scene anymore, because like I think the last time we played there was like over 10 years ago.
All of our friends have moved. Most of our friends from that scene have moved out of the city.
Tell us about what the scene used to be.
I don't know. Like Indianapolis is one of those cities like I don't know anything about, but his name is Nick.
Mm-hmm. Nick Selm.
Yeah. I was like, cause he did a couple of flyers for community record tours, but he's like, yeah, just come play at this house. And I think it moved locations to where certain places be like a dank basement. I think one time it was like a furnace basement that had like a poker table in it, but it was always just like really weird, just rolling up to like a random house. And there'd be like a good amount of people. So I don't know. Like it was a lot of fun. It, stuff gets like kind of jumbled up because we play a lot of basements and houses. But overall, I know we just always had a good time, but like the people who hosted that place, Nick and friends, were always accommodating, like super nice. And it was like, I think one of the few house show places that we would like actually return to because it wasn't actively falling apart or sketchy. It was just like super cool. It's kind of like, I think like sort of college age. And I think we've touched on that in different iterations of touring where we would like find different spots where there would just be like a scene and then it dries up within like 2 years. And then we try and go back and it's just nothing.
Do you know the time frame that this scene is happening?
I'd say like 2008 to like 2011. Like, cause I know the Community Records tour would go through it. That would be our Indianapolis spot. Cause I couldn't tell you another place to play in Indianapolis off the top of my head right now, even though it's like maybe 4.5 hours away.
Always house shows. Yeah.
Yeah.
Always like a solid connection to get to another place. So we're not driving, you know, like 8 to 9 hours to a night. Cause we're like in a pretty good, Nashville's a good hub to go somewhere, but it's also, that's why like a lot of tours would skip. Cause they could just loop around somewhere else, but we could travel 8 hours and we'd be in New Orleans or Detroit or Chicago or like, and then we have like Atlanta, Indianapolis, Louisville, anything like that. So that's usually why we kind of stay on the East Coast. We wouldn't really travel past like the Mississippi for the most part. And we would just do a route where we would just beat everything to death for like 3 months at a time.
Was the Halloween House one of the houses you played, or was that just the name that went to these different changing house locations?
I think it was just the name.
It was like the group of people who would, like Nick, and like they would just move somewhere else, and like we're always going to get a house where you can throw shows. Like sometimes it would, like I said, it would be like a weird huge basement. Sometimes it'd be just like one of those things where people like pack down in there, and you look up the wooden stairs, and there are just people hanging on the stairs, and we're like elbow to elbow trying to play like in the back of a concrete wall. So I'm pretty sure it was just passed down until like somebody moved away and just didn't pick up the mantle.
What was the weirdest, it doesn't have to be Indianapolis specifically, what was the weirdest house show you guys remember playing?
I've got an answer. What do you guys got? It might be the same.
I want to hear yours, dude.
Lee, what do you got?
I don't know if it's necessarily a house show, but a birthday party.
Yes. Tell it.
It was technically a house.
Let's hear it.
Was it Glenn's nephew or?
Oh, this is a different birthday party.
That birthday party too.
Multiple birthday party shows.
Anytime you show up and there's balloons on the mailbox, you know, you're about to have a great time.
Yeah.
Where was it? Like, where was that trailer at? It was like middle of nowhere, Tennessee, like, where from where we were, I think we had to drive like an hour and a half, like through like a highway. And our old drummer, like he's the drummer who joined the same day that I did. We played his nephew's birthday party, and it was to his nephew, his grandmother.
It was like three people.
It was in a trailer, and it was like one of those things, like once the sun goes down, like we were driving and the sun had gone down. It was like one of those things where we're fucking driving for like 9 hours. That's what it felt like. But it I think it was like 8 o'clock at night, and we played, and I think we played an entire, like a 20 minute set. We're like, we just got to get through this. And the grandmother, who was like upper 80s, was kind of just doing like the, oh, this is great. And we're like, this is the worst. I don't know what to think. And then
awkward.
It was so awkward. And the nephew, great guy. He showed us like some Nickelback songs on guitar that he got for his birthday. And we're like, hell yeah, brother. Let's get the fuck out of here. Like it was very nice. He was very appreciative.
Glenn, we love you.
We love you, Glenn.
Yes, Glenn. We love you.
He's like, hey man, will you please play this? And we're like, yeah, we at least thought his nephew would draw like, I don't know, 8 or 9 more people. But was that what you're going to say, Jonesy?
No, I always thought you were going to talk about when we were out with, was it Pears or?
Oh, it was the Lollies.
Or the Lollies, and Greg was.
Oh, God. That was the Lollies tour. That was the 2012 Community Records tour. 9 of us in a van with a dog And I think this is Ohio. I forgot the guy who booked it. But we show up and we're looking at the GPS and we're like, man,
it's really residential through here.
It's been a hot tour too, man. Let me tell you, it's like 100 degrees every day.
It was like no AC in the van. The five of us with Greg and the three guys in the lollies. So all packed in the van. And we're like, man, there's a lot of houses. And we turn a corner and I think Zach,
it's the house with the balloons.
He was like, are those balloons? Greg, are those balloons? Greg, are those balloons on the mail? Greg, are those balloons? And we played this birthday party in a garage. And I want to say the opening act, one of the fellow performers was this girl, I think, playing like praise worship songs and acoustic guitar. Everybody sat down. And then it was us and the lollies. And we were sitting on like this metal bench in the middle of the yard. I don't know, like a decoration. Like there, it wasn't attached to, it was just in the middle of a yard with some bushes around it. And I think every 15 minutes, one of us would go to the gas station, like two blocks down, get more beer, get more liquor. And we would just trade off just walking until we played to, I don't know, like 15 people. It was just so awkward.
Just Zach standing in the front yard, just smoking a cigarette, shirtless, just like looking at the ground, like just totally rethinking his life. It's just like, what are we doing here, man? But their parents were awesome.
Oh yeah. Their mom gave us like when you go to the dentist, this is my closest experience. She gave us like a toothbrush bag with like kind of like, oh, here's some mini toothpaste, a toothbrush, some floss for everybody in the band. And we're like, this is actually really thoughtful. And I'm just like, what am I doing here? But it's, I don't know. That was super awkward.
At house shows, we always end up hanging out with the parents, like sitting around eating breakfast with them and washing the dishes for them. And it's the best.
You're the opening act. Did she do an altar call?
I have no idea, man. Like that was one of those things. Like we could, I think we were in view of the open garage door to where like, hey, we're participating. But I think we were all just like standing in the yard, like really terrible lawn gnomes. Just like,
yeah,
I would like to know what her neighbors thought after that. Cause they were very supportive parents to have just this go on. But just so many more house shows we can name off, but I guess like, the worst one I could think of was the one in, was it Buffalo, New York? In that mud.
That was a wonderful show though.
It was a great show, but it was a mud pit basement, but they invited us to stay.
I thought it was Syracuse.
It might've been Syracuse.
Buffalo?
Buffalo.
Yeah.
Like they invited us to stay at the house and we're like, yeah, cool. This is great. I always sleep in the van. So I was like, I don't really care where you guys stay. They went inside and you said, I don't know. You want to describe it, Jonesy? Because I didn't go inside.
Yeah. Andy and I were like, everybody's asleep all over the floors. There's nowhere to sleep. Even in the yard, there's people sleeping. They're like, yeah, just go on upstairs. It's no problem. We go up there, and I can only describe it as like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre kill room. It's the very top of this like three-story house. You can see through the floors as you're walking on them. There's literally a single light bulb on swinging in the middle of the room, a mattress on the floor, plates all around it that have like mold and old food on it. And the smell in there was like a few cats had died. And Andy just looked at me and he's like, nope, fuck this. And we left because I didn't know somebody was hiding in the corners. It was awful. And we've slept some truly terrible places, but that one felt dangerous.
What's the worst place you've actually slept in?
The worst place?
Oh man.
man. There's been some like we all, I want to say we all clean, pretty clean cut, but like we play with like a lot of crusty bands, or like we used to, and I think we used to look a little bit dingier, but we would just show up to houses and they're like, we're not really all about like sleeping on the communal couch, you know, like to get lice or anything, but I don't know, man. Like it's just been like run of the mill, like crust houses where you just go in. There's too many dogs here, and I love dogs.
Nope.
Yeah, it's just like, nah. So we'd usually like pile in the van and it'd be super uncomfortable, or like one of us would like sleep under the van in a parking lot to just have more space and stuff like that.
I don't think like sleeping in like a pile of clothes on the floor has ever been like a true problem. It's when you have like the dude that's really creepy and kind of shifty just staring at you all night, not saying a word. That's the most uncomfortable places to sleep.
Yeah.
We have a very long story, which I'm not going to go into, but I'm pretty sure that he's since skinned somebody alive in Florida.
Oh, yeah. The crash pad guy.
Cannibal corpse at 3 a.m. And me and one of our friends sitting on the couch just staring at this whole situation unfold. Just blasting.
Yeah, Will and I dipped out of that one.
No furniture in his house except for the living. It was, anyway.
I mean, Florida's Florida, man. Like, you're going to run to stuff. I know Lee and I had a grill out with some cops at a Ron John surf shop parking lot, like, at 4 in the morning while they were experiencing this. So we had a great time.
Yeah, it was great.
It was a great time.
Great experience.
Great experience with cops all around, you know.
So, Lee, I want to talk to you about the visuals. Now, it's my understanding that you do all the visuals for the band, the art and stuff.
Mm-hmm. For the most part, like album art and stuff like that.
Can you talk a little bit about sort of the aesthetics that you've kind of created for the band? Because I do feel like it's distinct from other, you know, other ska punk bands.
I think what really set it off for me was like Green Day's Insomniac. Because that was by Winston Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess originally it was called like, If God Told Me to Skin You Alive. That was the name of that piece. But I remember being a kid and being like, I'll just love like the Insomniac artwork. And then when I got older, got into like Dead Kennedys, I was like, oh, it's the same guy. So I think Winston Smith is probably a big inspiration as far as like artwork and stuff.
Interesting. Okay.
Well, Will does all of the flyers.
And yeah.
Lee does all the artwork and a lot of t-shirt designs as well.
Do you get complimented on the sort of the Stuck Lucky visual? Is that something that people say to you? Like, I really like the album art. I really like the flyers.
Sometimes.
Well, they should, because it's good.
Well, we're saying it.
Didn't we see one of your pieces in like a, was it in Wolverine or in a movie or something like that?
Yeah, there's also like, I think like a Bank of America commercial or something.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, so how, what and how? The Wolverine story.
It's hanging on the back. You know, like when they decorate a kid's room for a movie or a commercial, one of his posters was in the background on the wall.
It's like in the background.
Was it a Stuck Lucky poster or was it just like art that you did?
I think it was just a Stuck Lucky one.
This is in what movie specifically?
Oh, I don't know. There was one, Matt Wixon posted it. It was like some TV show. And in the scene, you just see like the They're Them artwork just hanging out in the background.
That was Your Honor, that show with Bryan Cranston.
Okay, Your Honor.
A lot of stuff's filmed in New Orleans, and I guess like I couldn't name names, but like people, not because I'm not supposed to, but I just, some people work in like the film industry, and they'll like, you know, design teenagers' rooms, and we'll see like random Community Record stuff, but there's been specifically like our artwork and random stuff. Like there was that TV show The Purge, like that was an offshoot from the movies. I remember Lee's the poster he made for the Possum Soul album is in there's one season that's set in New Orleans, but in the, I guess the guy who turns into basically a serial killer, like that poster's in his room. And I was watching going, holy shit. Like, but yeah, I remember somebody sent us like some Bank of America commercial or something where some kid's like rocking out on a bed about like mutual savings bonds. And I was, and there's like
Devastation's playing in the background.
Really?
No. If only, I just remember like just seeing like a poster and like having to freeze frame it, but it was just like one of those like blink and you miss it. And I was like, that is one of our flyers. And I was like, we've peaked without, you know, not getting any money for it. Cause I know Fatter Than Albert had one of their songs in a season of Tremé during a house party where someone's like walking through to like,
yeah,
whatever. And like, I think like Aaron's Runaway Imagination's playing or something. And they got, you know, like they got money for that, for being on HBO.
That was very strategic on the part of the producers of that show. They had done research on what high school kids were listening to at that time in New Orleans. And they were told Fatter Than Albert and ska in general was the thing. And they weren't wrong because it was, you know, popular at that time.
Oh, yeah. And,
yeah.
We were definitely lucky to surf that wave down to New Orleans and hang out there for a little bit in the kids' pool.
Okay, so you got a new record, Counting Curses. This is your first LP in like 8 years, right?
At full length.
Yeah, full length. I know you had a split on Bad Time, and you had an EP also in between these two. This one, though, is on SPI Records.
Woo!
Woo!
Tell me about hooking up with Chris Reeves, I believe that's his name, the guy who runs that record label.
You believe?
Never heard of him.
Never. Yeah, I don't. I honestly don't know how it came out. We just realized, like, they started doing press for us, and then I'm getting stuff in the mail from them. That's pretty cool. No, I just hit up Chris about the record because Bad Time wasn't interested in the album. So I was like, I don't know. And I hit up Chris, and he was like, are you kidding me? And I was like, sorry. He's like, no, I really want to release this. And I was like, okay. So yeah, it's been weird finding, I don't know, like help with releases since Community kind of like went the way that it has, like, you know,
not ska.
Yeah, like I remember like when we did the album before, the self-titled one, like Greg and D-Ray have always been great, like, and they've been like super DIY, and it's cool to see them like how they grew and kind of expanded. But I remember Greg saying, maybe not verbatim, it's like, man, this I really like this record. He's just like, I have no idea how to market it or anything, because he would pitch it to like magazines and websites that he was getting like Cattywampus and like other bands on, and they would be like, yeah, we'll do like a piece on them. But they were just like, no, we don't want to do Stuck Lucky. And we're like, okay, that's fine. But I don't know, Chris and Michi, who does like all the social media stuff, like we're pretty terrible at social media.
Horrible.
Between the three of us, we sort of run everything, but it's, I hate doing it. I love talking to people online. Like they'll like message us, and it's been great. But yeah, I just hit up Chris, and since there, he's been
wonderful.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. No shade on anybody. Like anybody else we've worked with, like him and Michi have just been, I could text him about something stupid and they'll be like, yeah, we'll get on that. I'm like, oh, cool. And like, we've never really had like a PR team or like a label that I want to say like functions as a label. I'm not saying that like a whatever way. It's just, it's very baffling that they want to work with us and that they've just been super helpful this whole time. Like just since we like just hit them up.
Yeah. Well, Chris pitched me, Chris, that you guys being on the episode, and within that pitch email, he had one of you guys make a promo, say, hey, this is Stuck Lucky, and we're on In Defense of Ska.
Hey, this is Lee from Stuck Lucky, and you're listening to In Defense of Ska. Check out our newest album, Counting Curses, on Ska Punk International Records.
Yeah, that was me. I was sitting in the van, and I was just like, hey, how should I record this? And it was like, I just did it on like voice memos on my phone. And I just kind of just, he gave me, I don't know, Michi sent me like the script. And so I just ran through the whole script. It just like went, blah! And then my wife, she was like, you should sound like really deranged when you do this. And yeah, so I didn't even listen back to it. I just kind of went, okay, cool, I'm done. And I just sent it to him.
Is it?
You forced your hand, Aaron.
Is it usable?
I mean, I was like, okay, I mean, they could be on the show. They already did the promo. I mean, so much work saved right there.
So any band that wants to be on the podcast just has to record a promo and you'll interview them? Is that what you're saying?
Go record a promo, make some videos, just create a whole bunch of... by the way, don't do this, bands. I'm totally kidding. I just realized that some people listening might actually do this. Do not do that.
Please do not. Yeah, I'm surprised that we're doing. Thank you, by the way. But yeah. I'm still surprised that we're doing this, because like you said earlier, like we don't really do press for anything. Like it's just like nobody wants to talk to us.
It was tough. I mean, Chris, we had like 10 conversations. He's like, please. Like, I don't know. Stuck Lucky? Are you kidding me? I'm kidding, by the way.
I'll ask how much he had to pay. The Ska Make a Wish Foundation. Is that what this is?
Oh.
Oh. When's John Cena? Is John Cena, we can't see him right now? Is that what's happening? I really want to meet John Cena as well.
So okay.
It was that and do this podcast.
We'll make it happen.
So tell me a little bit about the, you know, making this record and the new songs. you know, it feels very in line with kind of, to me, it feels pretty in line with like earlier Stuck Lucky, you know, in terms of the influences and the sound of the band.
I think you're correct. We went back to our roots, you know, we figured.
Oh, did you go back to your roots? Oh, okay. After rehab?
Yeah, after, yeah, we went out, we explored some different sounds. We did a synth record and we just did the major label stuff with Bad Time and it just, you know, just fans didn't respond. So we decided to like get back to the grassroots.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I write some of the music. I don't write lyrics. I don't know why I'm talking. I think Lee and I just like,
we all take turns writing, but it's always the same kind of formula. How we've always written. Like I'll come up with like a guitar. I could either like come up with like a whole song or be like at least a skeleton and I'll show it to Will. And then we all just kind of bounce off each other.
Really fascinating stuff, guys. Let's dig deep. In defense of ska.
I know there's like a couple different ways that bands do it, but we've always kind of like pushed ourselves through writing a song by kind of just, we kind of do a lot of stuff just like ad lib and then like figure it out as we go and then just keep practicing it over and over and over again. I think a lot of the tone that we're getting off of this though is like COVID was kind of rough for a lot of people, in case you didn't notice. And we were all going through some kind of like, you know, there was some dark shit floating around. And I feel like a lot of that kind of comes through in the lyrics on this, but I think a lot of this was just, you know, it was cathartic.
Can you think of a song that exemplifies what you're saying?
The song Counting Curses. But Counting Curses, which that song I love, like, Lee could talk more about the title of it, but it's a lot of people don't really like, it's the, you know, it's the antithesis of count your blessings.
Mm-hmm.
Is that all you're, you know, if all you do is focus on the shitty things, you're never really going to enjoy life at all.
Yeah. And to not count my curses was actually advice from my wife that came home from work, like kind of just bitching about stuff one day. And she's like, you shouldn't count your curses. It's like, and it's just like, went boom. It's like, ooh, I'm going to use that one.
And sometimes we have, all of us can have slight tendencies to focus on the darker shit. But this is a good way for us to like psychologically work it out.
Also Monster Pig too.
Yeah. I mean, Monster Pig is kind of like when you break that down, it's kind of like the gentrification of Nashville and like different cities we've seen in California and like just how people were just absolutely screwed over during the middle of COVID, you know, and like people losing their houses and landlords evicting people and stuff like that.
Okay, so I was going to say is like this record and, you know, your music in general, but also a lot of the bands from your era, the ska punk bands that came up in the sort of 2000s, I feel like the music got particularly heavy. Like you guys are a good example of that. You're a pretty heavy ska punk band. Do you have any thoughts about why this generation, your generation of ska punk bands, went so heavy?
Corn.
it all comes back to Corn.
It's Circle.
Have you done an interview with anyone from Corn yet for the pod?
We're working on it.
Hell yeah.
Is it Fieldy? Please tell me it's Fieldy.
We can't say, but they have dreadlocks.
All right. So that's shit. All right. We'll figure it out. I know like just the way like kind of Lee, how we write songs is we'll just kind of come up with a riff and like Lee and I will bounce stuff off each other. Lee taught me how to play, like write a song. Cause like I would come to him with like a 7 minute song of like 17 riffs. And he's like, I don't know what to do with this. So he taught me how to like make into a song form and like all of us working together, like we'll get stuck on an idea and we'll put it together. But I think we like Jonesy, especially, like when I first met him, like he was listening to stuff like from Rasser's Rise. Like what are some other bands like Circle Takes a Square, stuff like that? Or is that the band or?
Yeah. I mean, His Hero's Gone, that kind of shit. Like I've always been into like hardcore, you know, metal and stuff like that. One of my favorite bands when I was like 15 was the Deftones, and I was in two bands in high school. So I always kind of like lean towards that kind of side of it. But,
mm-hmm.
For me, Destruction by Definition, man. That album just like, I don't know. I was like, that's it. I, you know, totally just like fell in love with the genre at that point. So it was kind of, yeah, I mean, it was a huge influence on me.
Suicide Machines, for anyone who doesn't know that record, but you should know that record. Just saying.
anyone who's dropped in on this podcast randomly and just goes, what are they talking about? Like no one knows about Suicide Machines.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like Assorted Jelly Beans, which is a band that I think gets looked over a lot. Mm-hmm. They were a big influence on us early on. Of course, Out Come the Wolves. But a lot of those had a, you know, more of an aggressive tinge towards it, you know, which I always appreciated. It was kind of an easy entrance point to me. Bands like AKA Rudy got me into the more danceable, slower stuff that I, you know, am gravitating more towards now and later in life. But, I'd say it was definitely just, yeah, our influences at the time.
Can you speak to the recording? I feel like there's definitely like a lo-fi element to the recording that seems kind of baked into the sound of Stuck Lucky.
A lot of that started with Andrea, I think.
Yeah. Bomb Shelter.
Bomb Shelter in Nashville. We always did on tape first and then, you know, did editing afterwards, but we always went straight to tape. And it's something that his understudy, Jack, has kind of taken on, but Jack kind of has that same sensibility too, which he feels like fits us, and I kind of agree.
That's the case for the new record too. It's recorded to tape.
Yeah,
some of it. Yeah,
most of it was, and then like we do like digital edits and stuff.
And they have like they're surround. I mean, there's you go into that studio and there's instruments everywhere too. So like if Lee wants to jump over on an organ, he can do that. You can pick up a weird. Was that Russian bass that we were playing with for a while and just try a bunch of different.
Oh, the Sovtek head.
Just trying different sounds and all kinds of stuff.
I think it's harder. Like, I think just the way, like, I don't know. Cause we're all around the same age, but I know if I had gone to school, like if I was like a couple years younger, I would have been a nu metal kid, but I fell into like Boss Tones and Real Big Fish in middle school. So, but then seeing that all kind of disappear and then like the early 2000s and like late 90s, like all kind of like new metal and the harder stuff coming up. I think it was just like kind of what influences you more. Like we had like a weird mix of that third wave. And then like I said, the Deftones and stuff like that. And then when you get together, and you want to make your own band. Yeah, I think that all kind of comes through to a degree, but not in the, I don't say ska and stuff like that, because you have like bands like Folly and like Flaming Tsunamis and Best of the Worst that pull it off like really well. And we're not like that to a degree because we're not like super metal or tech or anything like that. I think it just coming through like that way. I think that's how everything kind of like rounded out to where we're at now.
I think all of us have a pretty dark, morbid sense of humor too, though, since the beginning. And that's kind of what we've always been like. These are my best friends in the world for a reason, is that we kind of have the same humor and we know not to take shit too seriously.
Trying to keep it light for the podcast.
Hey man, if you can't laugh at it, then you're doing it wrong.
Last question. Then, who is this Father Mercy character I keep seeing online?
Well, Father Mercy was the song we did. I'm not going to go into the background of it, but it's just something that just came off the top of my head. And when we started doing the promos with John, we brought Lee to the Southern Thrift Store in Nashville, the great, wonderful store. And we dressed him up like a Southern Baptist preacher from hell.
Mm-hmm.
And Lee just kind of ran with it. He lost his mind a little bit and it was wonderful to watch.
Yeah.
That wig, though. Damn.
That wig.
That wasn't natural? All right. Well.
No, it's Amazon, baby.
But yeah. That periwinkle, I think John found the periwinkle turtleneck. And...
No, yeah, John picked out the everything. He's like, oh, this jacket would be great too. Put this jacket on.
That was crying, man.
John Pata, the guy who did our music videos and promo, he just kind of ran with the idea of trying to make like a contained universe of just stupid shit where we're just like, let's do like a community access type thing. And then it just kind of got a little weird. But we always thought it'd be funny to have like some sort of televangelist spin on it. And then he just like, let's go with Father Mercy and stuff like that. And just kind of happened. And I think it's pretty hilarious. There's a lot of like B-roll footage too. That's like, I don't know if it's going to show up at any point, but maybe, maybe not. I don't know if like YouTube or anywhere can like actually show it.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, they can.
Well, I'm getting hit with a bat, so I don't know if I can do that. So we'll see.
Will's got some great two-stepping moves too, though. You got to show those off.
That's fine. It's fine.
No?
Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slow Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow at In Defense of Ska on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leaving you by saying ska now more than ever. Okay, so this signals two things. One, you need to go to SPI Records and order the new Stuck Lucky record, Counting Curses. Order it now. Number two, you need to sign up for the In Defense of Ska Patreon to hear the rest of this conversation. Carnes, tell them all about it.
Well, there's some stuff that we talked about that too hot for mainstream audiences. This is only for Patreon ears only.
Finally got the leg. You want to know the story of the leg? Do you remember that from the pandemic? Remember Stuck Lucky talking about the leg?
Is that what we talked about? Oh, God, yeah, the leg story. Yeah, so seriously, yeah.
You want the leg story? We actually got the leg story, so head on
Patreon
over.
Exclusive. Yeah, then never to be told ever again.
Yeah.
All it'll cost you is at least $5, but more if you're feeling like you want to support ska to the full extent, then you can go above $5. If you want to just support Scott a little bit, yeah, that's fine. $5.
Let's get it.
Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good, all 100% free.
What if I had three jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.